Good morning. Today is Friday, October the 13th. Joining us this morning is Deputy
Fire Chief.
Oh, you want fire in there, too?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That's what we do.
You're not the medical chief. Well, you're fire chief.
We do that, too, but the big part of our job is the fire department.
Billy Reynolds, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to be here.
This morning, let's see if we can find a quote. Ah, here we go, from Bernard Williams. Mother Nature's love doesn't have 20/20 vision. Yeah, no kidding. Particularly today, huh?
Yeah.
Boy. Hey, how many of you guys are down there?
Right now, we don't have any guys down at the fire themselves, but we do have an engine covering Cal Fire so they can be down there. So we have an engine out in Fortuna covering right
now. So you're on the string.
Yes.
You're just not as exposed.
And I'm actually surprised they haven't been pulled down there yet with the way things are down there. It's been, I know they're screaming for resources, but again, we also have to cover locally too, because if something were to happen local, we've got to have the resources here to deal with that too. So
I know you guys have expertise in, I guess, urban. As much as we are urban. Not high-rise, but urban fire response. A lot of with the medical aid, the burns, and certainly with the chemicals, unfortunately, that you guys have had to deal with.
Yes.
And we've had to deal with as a community. And a little bit of wildland interface. When you hear the stories about this thing down there, what are your responses?
We actually have quite a bit of experience with the wildland and everything too. And honestly, we want to be there helping. It's the nature of our business to want to help people. And while we have, you know, our responsibility that we meet and exceed to help our local people here, we want to be down there helping as well, because, you know, there's people that need help. And we want to be there helping not only the citizens that need it, but also our brothers and sisters in the fire service too, because quite honestly, it's pretty challenging for them right now.
When I hear the stories about how quick it's moving through the grasslands, that's why I was thinking that their experience is different than ours. You guys, I mean, you might get an acre or two. Okay, there's not that much momentum. It's not going to be anything in relative magnitude to what they've got down there. I can't imagine. Well, I mean, I still am having a tough time wrapping around the Chetco Bar fire, but it moving that quickly, where it's going 30, 35 miles an hour up and over hills. I mean, you don't have to worry about it. Just as here it comes, guys. Get out now.
Right.
That's a whole different scenario. Do you think anybody in Humboldt County could react to that?
I don't. I don't think that, you know, these people that deal with the bigger fires on a regular basis, and, you know, with, you know, the different weather, warmer weather, lower relative humidities, things like that, I don't think that they could deal with it, let alone if we were to have the perfect storm of circumstances up here where we have, say, a run of hot weather and whatnot. It would be challenging, and that's the understatement of the year to say it would be challenging. It would be catastrophic, honestly. And we do have that wildland urban interface area where we have some areas that have, not necessarily in the greater Eureka area, but, you know, in the southern Humboldt areas where we have people tucked in amongst the vegetation and the warm weather and everything, it could very easily explode out there like it did. And obviously, we don't have the population density like they do in the Santa Rosa area, but it could be, you know, but lives are lives and property is property, and we could be definitely overwhelmed like they are right now.
It is. The thing that was intriguing to me, I talked to a buddy who's in Napa about the winds on Sunday. You know, we prepare for so many things. I don't think we have prepared for power poles being blown over. I just haven't seen that one in the equation, but the instantaneous spark, you know, 20,000 or 2,000 acres overnight, boom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here it comes. But the thing, I guess morbid curiosity, you know, I don't go down for floods. I don't go down to the shores for tidal waves. This one, though, I'm itching. I want to see where Fountain Grove Inn was, for it to jump six lanes of highway and the Meridian.
Right.
That to me is just mind-boggling. I can't grasp that one. I just isn't in my hardware right now to be able to see how that could have jumped through there, but it did, and it's so many different places. Have you experienced anything along those lines in your career?
I have not. And it's interesting you mentioned that like that. I spoke yesterday with one of our captains who had a doctor's appointment down there over the last couple of days. And this captain, prior to coming to Humboldt Bay Fire and Humboldt Fire District prior to that, was a Cal Fire firefighter who had spent many years doing that.
Yeah, that takes years to be able to say that cleanly.
Absolutely. And she was saying that it was driving through there to get to the doctor's appointment and then driving home was just mind-boggling that the amount of destruction. You drive past these areas that you've driven past and taken for granted, you know, through your entire life, and it's just Santa Rosa, it's just Windsor. And as you're driving through it, seeing these buildings that are gone and just wiped out, it's something that it's an emotional experience, because you just, again, you realize how vulnerable you are and how vulnerable that we are to, again, just overnight. It was there yesterday and gone today. And it puts it in perspective for you to be able to go, could this happen where I live? It's oh my goodness.
Well, it's the same thing, I guess, with an earthquake for a lot of folks that, you know, and we haven't had one to that magnitude. Boom, and okay, and everything's down.
But
okay, or you know, the fire coming through and boom, everything's exploding and catching. I mean, those. I guess that's probably as close to a hurricane scenario where the air pressure changes and things are exploding as we can get in our part of the country.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, awe-inspiring, perhaps. Yes. Yeah. KINS News and Information Times 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times 8:24. We're back to talk shop this morning with Billy Reynolds, Deputy Fire Chief. Man, I don't know if I can do that without hurting the microphone. Deputy Fire Chief from Humboldt Bay Fire. Looking at some of the lessons that have been learned so far, the 911 system in parts of the county went down. A lot of phones went down. The redundancy that had been promised by AT&T didn't function. Roads closed, et cetera, you know. When you guys go through the training, or at least what we hear, it's always earthquake, it's always flood. Do we have a whole new area now to practice?
Well, it just it helps highlight how, on the North Coast, how isolated we really can be, not only transport-wise, but with needing the resources for, you know, if we were to have a similar event up here, heaven forbid, you know, how are we going to get our help up here? How are we going to get, you know, people can come up here and help us like they need down in Sonoma County. And, you know, it just not only with the transport side of it, but also communications, like you were mentioning, you know, the redundancy wasn't there. And, you know, so it forces us as the people that are providing the safety for the people up here to figure out how are we going to deal with this if this comes up here. And, We have, while I think we're in a good spot up here, I think we provide a good service. It also shows that, you know, what are we going to do when the big one does hit up here? And we need to have a meeting of the minds and basically figure out how we fix these things.
It's intriguing to me. Santa Rosa's got a pretty extensive fire department. Sonoma County has got, you know, Cal Fire, CDF have. Was it just the magnitude of this thing that overwhelmed them, or was it perhaps they were caught by surprise because nobody had thunk about this kind of thing.
I think it's a combination of all of the above. I think that, you know, with the weather, with the fire conditions, and with the just unexpectedness of how quickly that moved, I know for me, waking up in the morning and seeing how it grew overnight and the how it got into the urban area of Santa Rosa so quickly, I think, honestly, if you pardon the expression, I think they were truly caught with their pants down with as far as how quickly that it moved and got through there. And that should serve as a wake-up call for all of the urban areas, whether it's Santa Rosa, whether it's Los Angeles, or whether it's Eureka, California. We need to really examine the wildland-urban interface and figure out what our worst-case scenario is. And when we look at that worst-case scenario, take and multiply it times 2, times 3, times 100, and think about what it would look like in our area. And it's pretty scary.
I know, going back through, decades of talking with fire guys, everything when we talk about speed or explosive nature, unless it's chemical-based, whether it's the old brewery or some of the more current situations, it's all been around Victorians.
Right.
It's old redwood. It's big redwood. It's jumping, leaping redwood. Redwood, redwood, redwood. Santa Rosa doesn't have a ton of redwood.
Right.
Not in the areas that are happening. And I wonder, let's say it came in, a scenario where the fire came in, let's say Pine Hill, and fed by a southern fire, or southern wind rather, so it's nice and dry, it's not coming off the coast, it's not foggy, and it comes ripping up that way. How surprising that might be, because all of the training, all of the focus, you know, even the one fire station might disappear real quick. And now you're having to bring in from everywhere, and it's not the areas you guys train. It's not the normal kinds of stuff. You're dealing with gullies. You're dealing with big backyards. You're dealing with ranch-style homes instead of three- or four-story Victorians. How different does that feel for you right now?
And it's funny you mentioned Pine Hill, because that's the area where I live, and that's where my family and that's where my kids have grown up. And so, that's why it's imperative of us, as firefighters. You know, we talk about the Victorians and those the worst case scenario,
commercial district-y stuff.
Commercial district-y stuff. But that's why it's important for us as firefighters and emergency service providers to be familiar with all areas of our districts, because, you know, while we have those nightmare areas where with, you know, the old Victorians and everything, we have a pretty diverse mix of terrain. We have a pretty diverse mix of, you know, water supply. We have areas that have fire hydrants. We have areas when we go out into the, like, say, Elk River or deep into the freshwater areas, hydrants are far and few between.
You're bringing it with you.
And we have to bring the water with us. So that's why we have to be, you know, a jack of all trades when it comes to the fire service, to be ready for not just the big Victorian, not just the Silvercrest, elderly, buildings, but we have to be ready for everything in our area. And it's
can
tough
you
to
be?
Do that. I don't think 100%, but we try. And we have to basically, that's why we're constantly training on these different scenarios. And one week we might be training on laying a line from a hydrant and doing our normal fire attack. To the next week, we might be doing the water tender revolution, where we're shuttling water with not only our own agency, but bringing in departments like Arcata, Lolita, Fortuna that have water tenders and everything, and working together to have that interface.
How quick could you fill, I know there's specific terms, a fire truck with water from the fireboat? Is that a 10-minute process? Is that an hour and a half? I mean, if you were having to shuttle in and the hydrants were down.
It's not a 10-minute process. It's going to take time, especially you mentioned the fireboat. We have to depend on the harbor district to get an operator out there. It's going to take a little bit of time.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this very morning with Deputy Fire Chief Bill Reynolds from the Humboldt Fire District, Humboldt Bay Fire District. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Before the fires, I was thinking, geez, you know, the medical response you guys do, and with the Vegas shooting, I guess maybe because it's kind of in the neighborhood. Maybe because it was a country concert. Maybe because if I knew about it, we might have sent people there as a promotional thing with the country station we have. Or maybe it's because I was out of town. I mean, there were a whole bunch of things that were in there for me that they're still swirling for me. If there was a large gathering, whether it could be at the horse races, it could be reggae, it could be something else where there's a large congregation in our area. The medical response, we've not really heard an awful lot about, other than the guys that were there already were helping out. And haven't heard too much about the medical response to those that were injured. So I suppose that means that it went smoothly. Would something like that go smoothly here if it was a large group, and there was a situation?
We do have a countywide mass casualty incident plan that we do practice on a semi-regular basis. You like to think that it would go smoothly, but you know, you hear about the stories of the Las Vegas incident and where he was actively shooting as, you know, law enforcement, first responsive medical and fire were arriving on scene. And that's the big X factor. You have an active assailant who is actively shooting at people. And, you know, because we think about it, you know, we have our plan where we arrive on scene and we start doing our incident command and we start doing our, you know, our normal protocol and procedures.
Probably normally based on an earthquake scenario?
Yeah, earthquakes and other things like that, large traffic collisions.
It's over. But when usually, you get there, you're reacting to it. It's not ongoing.
Exactly. And it forces us to start thinking about, you know, things that we've never thought about from the fire service terms of, say, firefighters and bulletproof vests. Firefighters working with law enforcement going in to try to stop the killing and to try to protect our own people in order to have them be able to do their job. And it's not something that, you know, our local law enforcement does a great job of, you know, doing the things that they do, but we're firefighters. We don't normally think about, you know, people shooting at us. You know, we think
maybe
about
stealing the truck, but not endangering lives.
So it really it's imperative on us to work with law enforcement and local EMS, city ambulance, arcade ambulance, and the others to be able to work together to be able to figure out what we can do better, because it's a different world than just earthquakes and things like that. These are people that are actively trying to hurt us and civilians out there. So what can we do to try to save lives?
Now, we've had shooting, the barricade, I forget what the name of the silly building is, on 4th, like a block from the courthouse, block from City Hall.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Second, third floor. I mean, it was like three or four times over the last little bit. Okay, divert the traffic, but it wasn't somebody shooting out, trying to take people out. It was more themselves,
right,
or if there was somebody in there with them. I don't know. Can you even train to that kind of a situation?
I think you can. I think that we need to recognize what our role is as firefighters and first responders and medical personnel. But the big key component of all of this is communication and working with and training with law enforcement to think of, again, going back to the fires and trying to think of the worst case scenarios. To me, thinking of Las Vegas, that is the worst case scenario when you have something like this. You have a large gathering of people that are there, have no idea that something like that's going to happen, then all of a sudden it's thrust upon them. And to be able to think about, you know, not only the small scenarios where you have a barricaded suspect or you have a barricaded sniper who might be shooting, but you have this large scale event where you have hundreds of people, thousands of people that need help right now, and we can't get in there to help them because somebody's shooting. What do we do? And that's where we have to work with our brothers and sisters in law enforcement to say, what can we do to help you be more effective? And how can you help us do our job, which is the medical care of helping these people?
Yeah, you don't want to be the big red target with a flashing light moving into a scenario.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. And as we go into these, you know, I know that's a big topic of conversation is if we do have to wear gear like law enforcement, you know, do we want to single ourselves out by wearing our distinctive fire helmet? Do we want to wear something that's more innocuous that we're not standing out so we can get in there and work with law enforcement?
Like blue little hats that have your logo on the front.
That say fire and big red letters on there.
Yeah.
Now if we become a victim, if we take a bullet, you know, are we, you know, now does law enforcement's focus have to, rather than dragging citizens out, are they trying to drag firefighters out, or are we trying to drag police officers out?
Good for tabletop exercises, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41. We'll be back with more.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop, final segment of the week. This morning we've got Billy Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire with us. You guys got the open house tomorrow?
Yes, we do.
Is the fireboat part of it?
Fireboat is not part of it. Just
boom!
just by location. Okay. That'd be a tough haul.
Well, no, you just have it in two locations.
Oh, okay.
I know, that's two different barbecues, two different – yeah, okay, fine. So what can folks expect tomorrow? Popping into the fire?
Well, coming into the fire station, it'll be at our main fire station, Fire Station 1 at 6th and C Street, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We encourage people to come down and meet their firefighters. We're going to have lots of displays like we always do, everything from our antique steam fire engine, which we'll be operating and pumping this year, to...
Is Stan doing it?
Stan is not doing it.
Oh.
One of our battalion chiefs, Ken okay. Holbert and Kevin Voorhees, will be down there doing it.
Well, they could hurt themselves. That might be fun.
I hope not. Let's not go there. But we'll also have a vehicle extrication demonstration, demonstrating the jaws of life like we always do. And it's just a great opportunity for people to come down. There'll be free food and drink down there. And it's a great opportunity to come down and meet your fire department. Come down and see us and where you're not having to meet us on a call or something like that.
Do the kids get to do the fire pole?
We don't let kids slide down the fire pole. We don't want anybody to hurt himself, but we do show them around the firehouse and show them where we live and sleep and everything. And
PC has come to the fire department?
It has.
All
it takes is one person to hurt themselves, and it ruins it for everybody.
Yeah, but you guys have got medical aid right there on site. I mean, it's no big deal.
We do, but we prefer not to have to do that there. So.
Okay, fine. What is the biggest jaw-dropper about Jaws of Life?
The biggest jaw dropper about the Jaws of Life is just the sheer power of that tool, for me anyways. Basically showing that we can take, you know, a vehicle and we can basically cut it apart in order to get somebody out of a vehicle that's been hurt in a major traffic collision in very little time. Now, obviously, I say very little time. Every extrication we go on is different with the amount of damage to a vehicle and how entwisted somebody is in there. But again, just the power of that tool and the amount of... what it can actually do to a vehicle and get somebody out.
In the old days, you just kind of had to grunt and pull and tug and...
Yeah, it was all hand tools. We still practice with that, too, because...
In case it doesn't work.
We do a good job maintaining our tools, but things happen. And if something were to happen where the tool wasn't to function, we still have to get somebody out. So it's hand tools and saws and a lot of brute force and labor.
Where do you find the car?
John's Used Cars and John, Wreckers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Every year, not just for open house, but during the year, they're always quick to be able to donate something from their yard to be able to help us out. And it's such a resource that we have. And it's funny going to other areas in the fire service. Not everybody has a resource like John. So a lot of areas will get a new set of jaws or tools, and they don't have any way to practice with them until the real deal. So they're a huge resource for us. We can't say enough good about them.
Do you get an opportunity to work like on commercial vehicles or the big rig trucks or RVs or things like that, that, you know, they're not the rollover cars or the basic ones that you're going to run into? They're some of the bigger ones?
Not always. If they have something like that, they've been really gracious in the past of donating that to us. The most recent thing we had wasn't through John's Used Cars, but the city schools had an old bus that they were getting rid of, and they donated it to us, and we were able to practice on vehicle electrification on a school bus, which was unique.
Well, and hopefully it doesn't ever have to be applied, but you can imagine now all the emotion associated.
Right.
I bet you guys got twisted just cutting on a bus.
It was weird. We talk about basically, you know, we don't see them that often, but fortunately we don't, because, yeah, that would take a toll on us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have fun tomorrow. Again, 10 to 3?
10 to 3.
Free food, free fun.
Come meet your fire department, 6th and C at Fire Station 1.
See everybody there.